Good morning, everyone. There we go. This is my security blanket for today, but I'm going to try to ignore that. But please show me grace if I forget something and I have to go check. So today we're going to talk about integrity under pressure. How many of you are familiar with the game Musical Chairs? Put your hand up. If you're online and you're familiar with this game, could you just put something in the chat, a little heart or something? And can I just see those hands again? Yes, it's a very common game. And for those of you who've never played it, you're missing out on something. It's basically a game where chairs are set up, fewer chairs than there are people. The people walk around the chairs. When the music stops, you need to sit down. And if you're the one caught without a chair, sorry, you're eliminated. I was first introduced to this game when I was 6 years old. It's grade one. Another classroom has come into ours. And we're celebrating something. Can't exactly remember what it was we were celebrating, but we're having this game. And so the teacher tells us about it, and oh my goodness, I am so excited. I'm sitting there, oh, I want to play this game. You know, that nervous energy, I just want to do this, I want to win, I want to be the last one. And so first round comes, we're standing there, my classmates are with me, we're all kind of excited, and the music starts playing, and we start walking around the chairs. Music stops. I find a seat, I sit down. Yes, I got it, I made round one. Two people to my right and to my left, all of us are celebrating. I mean, remember, we're six, okay? We're 6 years old. We're so happy we got our seats. We weren't eliminated in round one. Okay, whew, all right, round two. The excitement starts again, the music plays, we walk around, music stops, I sit down. I'm excited, I did it, round two. I turn to my right, and the two of us are just rejoicing in this victory, when all of a sudden, completely out of nowhere, I did not see, I feel some hands on my shoulder, and literally, violently, I get torn off that chair and shoved to the ground. I'm in total shock. I look up, and I see that there is this boy sitting in my chair. This is awful. I'm so upset. This is not fair. I looked to the adults, hoping that they could help me correct this injustice. They didn't even notice. In fact, the teacher just says, "Okay, boys and girls, round three." And my little six-year-old heart was broken, and I walked away knowing that legitimately that was my seat, and I should have been in round three, but I was eliminated. In the big scheme of life, that's a hurt with a small h. We've all encountered them. And sadly, most of us have encountered hurts with what I call a big H. Terrible, terrible hurts that we've encountered in our lives. I'd like you now to think of one of those, either a big H or a little h. And if you're online, I would like you to do the same. Just think of something you've experienced that was unfair or unjust. I want you to think about some of the feelings that surrounded that situation. And could you resonate with some of these feelings? Frustration, fearful, hostility, rage, anger. You feel disrespected, jealousy, envy, betrayal. We've experienced these. It's part of being in a human world. We've experienced some of these. And you'll notice that all of these are negative emotions. We don't particularly like to have these emotions. But that's the natural reaction when we feel that we've been treated unfairly or unjust. And in one way, this is actually very good that these are the feelings that come from us. Because it tells us something very, very important. It tells us what our hearts know. That we as human beings, created in the image of God, are valuable. That God puts such value on us that he does not want us to be treated this way. And so that visceral reaction that comes out of us is aligning our hearts with God that, yes, we have value. If you have an old mug sitting in your kitchen cupboard and you don't like that mug, it's ugly. It's just not the right mug. It doesn't make your tea or coffee taste any better because it's ugly. And then one day, it falls out of the cupboard and breaks. Whoopee ding dong. You sweep it up, put it away, and no loss of sleep. There's no value to that mug. But when human beings are treated that way, it's not that way at all. We have great value, and God has put that value on us. So the question is, when we feel these feelings of anger, which is good reaction because it motivates us to do something, to fix an injustice, either for ourselves or for others. Many of the great causes in our world today where people have fought to break injustice stemmed from that anger, that energy they got, the righteous anger of something that's just not right. But the problem is, if we stay in that anger, it can ruin us. So the question we ask today is, how do we have these reactions that align with God, that say we're valuable, but yet maintain integrity and not allow these feelings, these negative feelings, to overcome us and to rule our reactions? Well, we've been studying David over the last few weeks. And David was a shepherd boy who was anointed to be king. But there was a lot of time lag between the time that God told him he was going to be a king and the prophet actually anointed him and said, "You will be king of Israel," to the time he actually took the throne. There was quite a huge gap. And the one thing about David was that he had a very, very close walk with God, and he had great intimacy with God. And through this intimacy, all the experiences he had in that waiting time prepared him to become a good king, prepared him for what he would face on the throne. And it's because that close intimacy with God that each of those experiences did not derail him, but actually drew him closer to God and actually made him better prepared for the kingdom. And today is no exception. So today we're going to look at David and some of his experiences he had when he faced injustice. So let's set the stage here. There was two times that David faced a situation that was extremely unjust, extremely unfair, when Saul was hunting him to kill him. So Saul is the present king. He too was anointed by God to become king, and he started off well. But somewhere along the line, the power of the position took over for Saul, and he wanted to keep it. And he knew that he outstepped his rule, his area that God had given him to rule. And he thought he could do what a priest did or what a prophet did. And he moved along with just trying to get power and keeping his name in a really good light in front of the people. And God rejected him. So he knew he had been rejected. He knew it. But he was still trying to hang on to that power. David comes along, and Saul knows that David is going to be the one. And he can't accept that. Although David is with him, he has respect for David, he is so consumed with jealousy and so consumed with hanging on to power that he's blinded, and then he wants to kill David. So David literally has to run for his life. This is not a little H hurt. This is a massive big H hurt. He is running for his life because Saul is after him. And so he's running through the desert, and he goes with his men who are with him, and they're hiding in a cave. And Saul pursues him with his army to kill him, and they're looking for him. Then all of a sudden, Saul has to use the bathroom. This is not the situation where you can pull into a Tim Hortons and use the facilities. He uses a cave. So he's in this cave, in this most vulnerable position, and of all the caves he could have chosen, which one does he choose? The one that David is hiding in. Man, this looks like a God-given opportunity to kill your enemy and be done with it and take the throne that's rightly yours. And his men, David, tell him, "Do it, do it, do it. Can you not see God has put your enemy right into your hands?" David's conscience bothers him. He cuts the edge of Saul's garment, and then he moves back. He's not going to go anymore. He says, "I cannot touch the one that God has anointed." And so Saul finishes his business, walks out. David goes after him and confronts him. "What are you doing, Saul, chasing after me? Can you not see I could have just killed you and I chose not to?" And then Saul weeps and has this huge dramatic reaction about, oh, I'm so sorry, David, you are right, you are a better person than I am. And then they part ways. This is a very interesting point here. David does not follow Saul and go back to life as it was. He stays separate. And this is a very, very important point because Saul knows who he is dealing with. Sorry, David knows who he is dealing with. Saul is not trustworthy. Although Saul's words that he just shared may be authentic, he may actually be feeling them at this moment, Saul has gotten to the point where the love of power and jealousy has so consumed him that tomorrow he may change his mind. So David does not go with him. And this is a very important point we need to consider because when we're dealing with injustice, when we're dealing with unfairness, it doesn't mean we passively accept abuse. Sometimes the right thing to do is to separate. Sometimes the right thing to do is to seek legal advice. What we're saying here is that David did what he should do appropriately, but he did not take revenge. He did not retaliate. He did not take matters into his own hands and say, I'm going to deal with this. I'm going to do this. Instead, he trusted God. He trusted that God would make him king at the right time and that the king who was anointed by God, God would remove him at the right time. It wasn't David's job to do. So he was trusting in God and he was leaving revenge and retaliation to God, but he was also taking precautions. And David's precautions were well taken because guess what? You flip the page just two chapters later in 1 Samuel 26, David finds himself in another very similar situation. Saul is after him again. So they're back on the run. And this time, both of them are sending scouts out. So Saul sends out scouts to find out where David is. David is sending scouts out to find out, okay, where's Saul? Let's hide from him. So at one point, Saul's army is resting and they fall asleep. Saul has a bodyguard whose job is to protect the king. He falls asleep too. And David says, let's go in. So David goes into the camp. All these people are sleeping. He takes the spear, he takes a water jug, and he leaves. Again, he confronts Saul and says, wake up. And he talks to his bodyguard, Abner. What are you doing? You're supposed to be guarding the king. Why didn't you? I've got his spear in my hand. So again, they have a similar conversation. Saul, again, is very sorry. But things don't change. They go again in their separate ways. Okay? David knew Saul, and David was reacting in a way that honored God, that protected himself. So the question is, why and how? Well, I already touched on the why. The why was because David was trusting God to care for him. David was trusting that God would put him on the throne at the right time. And the how? How did he do this? How was he able to overcome those feelings of anger, retaliation, when he had the power in his hand to kill off Saul? Well, I would like to say it's because of his connection with God, that intimacy he had with God. The miracle is not so much that David was able to forgive. The miracle is that God empowered David to be able to do this. That's the miracle. God did it through David, through that relationship he had with him, through the intimacy, through all the times he spent with God, he was able to know God is trustworthy. Even in this situation, I can trust God. But there's another aspect that we can bring into this story to help us understand it a little bit better. And it's wonderful that David himself was a writer. So on one hand, we have the story, but on the other hand, we have what David wrote about his own feelings and how it felt in his struggles. So we read in Psalm 57, have mercy on me, O God, have mercy. I look to you for protection. I will hide beneath the shadow of your wings until the danger passes by. So you see, this is not easy for David. He's not a superhero. He's a human being just like us. So when he walked through this period of time where he was so fearful for his life, where there was so much anger against Saul and his men, he was able to go to God and say, "Have mercy on me. I need to hide with you until this danger passes by." Acknowledging the danger and reminding himself that it is God who needs to protect him. He will send help from heaven to rescue me, disgracing those who hound me. My God will send forth his unfailing love and faithfulness. He's reminding himself of God's faithfulness to him. Okay? And sometimes when we're going through struggles, we don't sit back passively. Sometimes we really have to work. It takes courage to do the right thing. It takes effort to go into God's presence and say, "God, remind me. God, let me not fall into the temptation of falling into my feelings and the thoughts that go into my mind, that are in my mind, that are taking me to dark places." We need to come back and back and hunker down with the Word of God and remind ourselves of his promises, remind ourselves of how much he cares for us. So David was having this internal struggle, but he went to God for this internal struggle. And he went and he stayed there in God's presence, receiving the help he needed to be able to get through this situation. And then there's another example in Psalm 52. And this, again, is the same time David is writing this, but he's writing this specifically towards one person. His name is Doeg, and he's part of Saul's army. And when David ran away, when he found out that Saul was chasing him, he had to go quickly. There was no time to go home and pack your bag. He left. He left with nothing. So he gets to this certain place, and he goes to the priest, and he asks him for food, he asks him for weapons, he asks him for all kinds of things to help him, and then off he goes. Well, Doeg was there and saw this. And sure enough, he goes back to Saul and reports it to Saul. And Saul comes to that place and ends up killing that priest because he helped David. Even though he was totally innocent, and even though he told Saul, I know nothing about this, Saul kills him. Or actually, Doeg did the killing. So David writes, "Why do you boast about your crimes, great warrior? Don't you realize God's justice continues forever? All day long you plot destruction. Your tongue cuts like sharp razor. You're an expert at telling lies." Okay, what's David doing here? He's venting. He's angry. He's putting his thoughts down in words. Now, he's a poet. He can write really eloquently. Our thinking may not be quite like that when we're venting. We're not going to use that kind of language. We may use other language. Okay? Our venting may not make as much sense. But the point is, he's venting. He's angry with what Doeg did, and rightly so, because Doeg did something very wrong. So how does he deal with his anger? He takes it to God. He vents to God. God welcomes our venting. There's nothing we can say that's going to surprise God. He wants us to come to him. Sometimes we don't. We go to this person, and we go to that person, and we talk to this person, and we talk to this person, and the more we talk about it, the bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger our wound gets. But he was going to God, and that's where he was venting. Okay? So that's the how of it. The how of it was this intimate relationship he has developed with God. He uses that to help him through those tough times. He reminds himself of God's faithfulness. He vents to God. That's where he goes. And that kind of describes something that I will call contrasting realities. So we've talked about the idea that it is a good reaction when we are angry at injustice and unfairness, because that tells us that we are valuable. The natural reaction to that, though, is anger, unforgiveness. Excuse me, I do need my notes. Not because I forgot what I'm going to say, but because I can't read that slide back there. Revenge and pride. We want to retaliate. I don't know about you if you've ever had this experience. Someone does something wrong to you, and then over and over and over again, you play out in your mind a scene of how you're going to get back. And that person's going to be so embarrassed, and you're just going to feel so great. Okay, that's retaliation. We want that. That's natural. The way of the cross is very, very different. Jesus gives us a totally, totally different way of responding to this. And the way he responds is through mercy and love and forgiveness and humility. And that's what we see that David was able to do. And we see when David was able to do that, there's a bigger picture here. You see, God's mercy is so great. And I think sometimes part of our problem is we don't understand how evil our hearts really are, how our natural inclinations are such an insult to God. So we don't understand how much we've been forgiven. We think, yeah, I'm okay. Thank you, God, for your forgiveness, but I'm okay. Especially, I'm not like that person there who really needs your forgiveness. When we come to understand more and more and more how much we need God's forgiveness and how much mercy he has showered upon us, it's then easier for us to show mercy to others. Jesus showed so much mercy when he was on the cross. But in this situation with David and Saul, we focus on David and we focus on what he did. And sometimes we forget that there's another situation going on here, and that's between God and Saul. Because God loves Saul. Even though he's doing these crazy things, God still loves him. And although God has already given him up on him, taken the throne away from him, he still loves him. And through David's actions, God is giving Saul another opportunity to see and experience mercy and turn from his evil ways. So God is doing that also for Saul through David. That's what the cross does. It's so radically different from the natural reactions we have to being treated unfairly. And we see this in our individual lives. How many people live consumed with anger and bitterness in such a way that they're stuck to the past and they can't live in the present? And the longer they go with this, the bigger the wound gets, the bigger the offense gets, and they stay stuck there. They can't be released because they're stuck in that bitterness, resentment, anger, and desire for revenge. Every time they see or hear the name of the person who's wronged them, they have a physical reaction. They're stuck there. And we also see it on the international level, on the global scale. What happens when you take these individual situations where people want to retaliate and have revenge against other? We get into what's called a retaliation cycle. And it looks like this. You have an injury, and out of that injury you have anger. And as I said, anger is a good reaction because it's a motivator to do something right about something that's wrong. But if we stay in that anger and we allow that anger to consume us, then we want retaliation. And then when you have retaliation, you have more injury. And this cycle goes on and on and on until you get dehumanization, replacing compassion, where we don't even see the other person as human and we can easily kill them off. Okay? And this goes on sometimes for generations, where one clan or one tribe hates the other one, and then they do something that hurts them, and then they do it back to them, and then this goes on for generations, and the children are taught as young as 4 and 5 and 6 to hate that other group. They're almost not human. And then what happens when this gets played out? We see it in so many different conflicts around the world, but I just want to just bring one to you, just this one. This happened in the not too distant past, in the lifetime of many of the people in this room. There was a conflict that took place in a certain part of the world, and it was complicated. I'm not going to say it's just because of retaliation, but retaliation played a big role in it. Revenge, retaliation, till the point that the two sides saw each other as not humans. So it was very easy to go off and do some killing. So in this conflict that lasted about 100 days, 800,000 civilians were killed. And in addition to that, 2 million people fled the country, becoming displaced. This is what happens when this revenge and retaliation grows to the extreme end. This can happen. And let's put that a little bit into perspective when we think of just under 3 million people. The population of Markham, Ontario, and the population of Toronto together are just over 3 million people. So if you want to see that graphically, look at that map. Everything that's included in the red, all those people living in that area were affected. 800,000 were killed, 2 million were displaced and basically became refugees. When we look at the alternative realities, we see that one just takes you down into a dark area, but the other one takes you to life. But it's hard to do that. And we could look at David and say, well, you know, David was a greater than human superhero. But the reality is he wasn't. And actually, the good news is that the story is not really about David at all. It's a much, much bigger story. It's about Jesus. Because God, who gave the power for David to be able to overcome revenge and retaliation, is the same God who is now in us and gives us the same power. Through the coming of Jesus, we see that it's for all of us. Jesus has the same power to do in us what he did for David. To be able to free us from those feelings of revenge and retaliation, and to give us the ability to forgive. We read in 1 Peter 2, this is talking about Jesus. He did not retaliate when he was insulted, nor threatened revenge when he suffered. He left his case in the hands of God, who always judges fairly. So Jesus came to this world, and if you want to talk about a big H hurt, it's this situation right here, where Jesus, the very Son of God, comes to this earth to free us, and we decide to crucify him instead and reject him. And even in this case, it's very interesting. If you read the Gospel of John, Jesus takes all of this silently. The beating, they spat upon him, they put thorns on his head. He takes it all. But there's one little instant in John, and you may miss it if you read quickly, where Jesus is being tried by the high priests, and someone asks him a question, and he gives an answer, and someone else comes along and slaps him across the face and says, "Do you answer the high priest with that disrespect?" And Jesus turns to the person and says, "If I've done something wrong, okay, but if I'm saying the truth, why are you slapping me?" Of all the offenses Jesus experienced, but he speaks up in that case. So again, it tells us that giving up on revenge and retaliation is not a passive at all. We do confront the offense. We do speak truth into situations. But we give the revenge and the retaliation. We trust that God will take care of us and will take care of the other person as well. Jesus did it for us. And when he died, his spirit has come for all of us to be able to give us the same victory. I want you to imagine what the world would be like if we responded this way to insult and injury. How different the world would be. How many armed conflicts would not be around? They just wouldn't exist. The situation over just under 3 million people had to either be displaced or killed. Those would not exist if people were able to respond in love and mercy and to trust God and to go to him. Okay, we don't want to be naive about this. When we are hurt, it hurts, and we have to deal with it. Okay? We have to be able to walk through and admit that things hurt. But the big idea is that through the cross, God's grace frees us to forgive and to surrender revenge to him. And the key word here is free, because when we're able to do that, we become free. If we're not able to do that, we are not free. But then I also want to be honest with you and say, a lot of you in this room and those of you who are watching, you have a lot of hurt in your heart. Some of the things you may have experienced are just too great. There's just too much pain. And I don't want to give the impression that forgiveness is just very easy. Just put a smile on your face. Oh, God is good. Yes, God is good. And we don't talk about the pain and we shove it down. No, we need to be real. And we need to accept that there's a lot of pain cumulatively in this room and for all of you who are listening. And forgiveness is not something that comes naturally to us. And for this, I would like to just quickly look at the work that I've put up here. Is that when we're going through the process of forgiveness, We have to recognize we're not going to snap our finger and all of a sudden just love the person and want to hug them and bring them back into our lives. Sometimes we cannot go back and have the same relationship we had before. But we do need to take a time where we feel the anger. Don't try to deny the anger. And this part is called the hate. Need to feel that anger. Need to acknowledge it. You want to express it. The best place to express it is to God. You can cry out to God. You can scream if you need to, but get that anger out in His presence. You may need a trusted friend or a counselor, but we need to admit that we feel anger. And then the next one, is that we come to the point where we begin to heal. We need to be able to walk through the process. We may need to go back to the place of our hurt and revisit that. Again, as David did, he cried out to God. He reminded himself of God's mercy and grace. But we do need to heal, and that may take some time. That may take a little bit of time. But forgiveness is a choice that we're making, and it may be a process. And as we stumble and as we walk along, we can keep coming back to God and saying, Lord, I've chosen to forgive this person. Give me the grace to get through this anxious feeling that I'm feeling right now. He will do it. He will give us the grace. And then the last part of it would be something called come together. It does not necessarily mean that you come together physically, but you come together in your own heart, in the place where you can actually hear the person's name or see them, and it doesn't cause that visceral reaction in you, that you can actually heal from it, okay? You can wish them well. You can see the big picture in the situation, that even though that person meant to harm you, God will change it for your good, okay? You can see the big picture, okay? We saw that David was able to spare Saul's life, but the bigger picture in that is that God not only protected David and was preparing him for a throne, He was also having mercy for Saul, okay? And through this experience, look at how David was prepared. If David had taken revenge and killed Saul, he would have been no different than any other ruler in that time. Because once you get into power, you have so much power, you love the power, that you get consumed by it. And you know the old saying, power corrupts, absolute power corrupts absolutely. Okay, so you see how David is preparing himself and he has such integrity. He's going to go into a position where he has so much power that it's going to be so tempting to corrupt him. But it doesn't, because he's building his character through all the situation he experiences in life. It was not God's intent for David to be chased by Saul, but through that experience, through David going to God for help, God carries him through. And there's a bigger picture that God is working on. And David is a part of that. And David comes out a free man. He's not stuck to Saul anymore. He's not stuck to that bitterness. He can move on. And that is what God has for us. He has these contrasting realities. And He has the message for us that, yes, He understands it's not easy, but He will walk with us as we walk through the healing process of letting go of those who have harmed us. And in addition to that, we need to be ambassadors of others who can't speak for themselves. And some of the little things that we can do to even get us started on that is to just, you know, pray before we respond when we're angry. Pray that God will help us see the other person's point of view when we're in an argument with them. I strongly recommend that prayer if you're married. It really helps to be able to see your spouse's point of view. It ends fights before they begin. So those are some of the small things we can do. But build that intimacy with Jesus. That should be your number one priority in life. Wherever you are in your relationship with Jesus, build and build and build on that intimacy, for He will carry you through. And He gives us that choice. We could choose the Jesus way or the way of the world. So the question is, which will you make?